In Connecticut, early voting begins today. Lieutenant Governor Susan Bisowitz reminds voters that there's a question on no-excuse absentee voting on the ballot.
That question will appear right above the presidential candidates on a few ballots. It will be on the reverse side. So just a reminder to voters, make sure you weigh in on the absentee ballot question.
Early voting will be at the town clerk's office in most towns from 8 a.m. to 6 each day, and then on October 29th and 30th, it'll be from 8 to 8. You're listening to After All Things, WSHU's daily news and culture update from the Long Island Sound region. Connecticut lawmakers are worried about a proposal to privatize one of the state's largest utilities. A group of LIRR workers are suing the railroad for not better protecting their safety. Labor Department stats show pretty good news regarding Connecticut job growth. Plus, how are Connecticut candidates talking to voters about the budget? Those stories and more are ahead. I'm Sabrina Around. Connecticut officials are concerned about a proposal to privatize the state's second largest utility. They want the state's Public Utility Regulatory Authority to scrutinize the deal. WSHU's Ebong Udama has more.
U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal says the pending purchase of Avangrid's outstanding shares by Iberdrola, the Spanish parent company, would make the utility less accountable to ratepayers.
Something smells it, and Pura ought to get to the bottom of it.
Attorney General William Tong says the move would violate the company's agreement to clean up English Station, a decommissioned coal-fired power plant in New Haven, and maintain local control.
If they're not going to honor their obligations under English Station and their obligations to provide local control, who is?
Consumer advocate Claire Coleman says the utility's profits would be taken overseas.
With no benefit to anyone in Connecticut or in the broader U.S. economy.
Ebon Udama, WSH News.
Seven Long Island Railroad employees say they were attacked by passengers, and now they're suing the railroad for not adequately protecting them, WSHU's Desiree Diorio reports.
Most of the assaults involved conductors collecting train fare from riders. In court documents, the six conductors and a station janitor say their injuries range from nerve damage and hearing loss to anxiety and post-traumatic stress disorder. An MTA spokesperson told Newsday the agency will never compromise on employee safety. Crime on the LIRR reached an 18-year high this summer. The lawsuits come as transit advocates are pushing Governor Kathy Hochul to enact a congestion pricing plan to increase ridership through higher tolls on vehicles entering New York City. Desiree Diorio, WSHU News.
Employment has remained healthy in Connecticut so far this year. WSHU's Shelley Hussman-Kadish reports on the latest study from the State Department of Labor for September.
Data for September shows the state's unemployment rate fell slightly to just over 3%. That's the lowest level since September 2001. September's gains in employment were led by professional, scientific, and technical services, along with healthcare and local government. The largest declines were in state government, transportation, information, and construction. The study shows job growth was very strong in the first half of 2023 and weaker by the second half of the year. That pattern is repeating in 2024. Shelley Hassman-Kadish, WSHU News.
Connecticut's budget, and specifically the fiscal guardrails, has been a hot topic this year. How are candidates speaking to voters about this? That story is coming up.
Local support comes from Hartford Healthcare, the only health system in the Northeast, with all its hospitals receiving A grades for safety from the Leapfrog Group, the nation's leading independent safety watchdog group. HartfordHealthcare.org.
Connecticut Connecticut has been given a $125 million grant to complete the highway reconfiguration in Meriden. The federal grant will be used to improve safety at the interchange that connects I-91 and 291 with Route 15. The project includes eliminating weaving points and adding multi-lane exits. It's expected to be complete in 2030. College hopefuls can apply at up to 5 schools in the State University of New York system free of charge. SUNY is waiving the $50 application fee all this week as part of New York's College Application Month. And over 50 private colleges throughout the state are also waiving their application fees this week. They include Adelphi, Hofstra, and Molloy Universities on Long Island. A new report out of the University of Connecticut shows agriculture, both on and off the farm, contributes $4 billion to the state's economy and supports more than 30,000 jobs. The report says that's thanks to growing greenhouse operations and what the FDA calls specialty crops, so things like fruits, vegetables, melons, and ornamental plants. The report also highlights aquatic farming, which contributed more than $33 million alone to the economy in 2022. That's fish, shellfish, kelp, and more. Connecticut's budget and specifically its fiscal guardrails has been talked about a lot this year, but how are the candidates talking to voters about it? WSHU's Ebong Udama spoke with the Connecticut Mirror's Keith Faneff to discuss his in-depth reporting on this. It's part of the collaborative podcast, Long Story Short.
The state's landmark 2017 bipartisan budget agreement put in place caps to restrain state spending and help fix the state's finances. But politicians are now debating whether it's time to adjust some of those constraints. How are they trying to help voters understand the debate, and are voters really interested?
Well, that sort of is the $64,000 question. It's hard to argue that there's a larger issue coming up than these budget controls for the 2025 session. But because those topics are so wonky, it is difficult, and everyone's sort of looking for a hook, whether they're talking about the impact this can have on our children, whether they're trying to provide an explanation as to why various services are suffering. But some people are trying to attack it with some new branding. You know, the supporters of these controls call them fiscal guardrails. Now we're hearing them referred to as fiscal roadblocks. Everybody's trying to find some way to make them chuckle.
Are voters interested in any of this? Or is it just going over the heads of most voters?
I think they are. But I think what it is they're sort of, and I don't mean to be cryptic, they're interested and they don't know they're interested. Let me give you an example. I know when I was talking with the co-chairs of the Human Services Committee, they will often get asked questions, for example, why are our Medicaid rates so poor? The rates that we pay doctors who treat low-income patients haven't been adjusted on an across-the-board type manner since early 2008. And KFF, formerly the Kaiser Family Foundation, recently ranked us 42nd out of 50 states in what we pay specialists. So if you're somebody on Husky and you need to see something more than someone more than a primary care doctor, good luck, because the money that we're paying the doctors who will take on new Medicaid patients, we're not competing with the New Yorks and the Massachusetts of the world. We're just ahead of West Virginia. Well, when folks are saying, how in the world does something like that happen? Or how is community college tuition this fall 11% higher than it was just 2 years ago? People are then saying the answer are these budget controls or fiscal guardrails, and now we're into the discussion. And people are finding they're interested once they realize what's at stake.
And then there's also an argument that if we spend more of the money now, our children and our grandchildren will be stuck with the bill.
That is the hook that some of the conservatives are using, the Yankee Institute for Public Policy. They put out a study recently, and that's kind of become the blueprint for some of the real supporters of these guardrails. I think the Yankee president called it the gift that keeps on giving. The estimate is given almost $8 billion in surplus funds that we've paid into the pensions since 2020, has stopped our required annual pension contributions from growing by about $650 million. But even that is sparking a lot of debate, because that's a very tricky thing. That makes it sound like there's $650 million more that you can spend on other programs, because we put surplus in the pensions. Those surplus funds were invested and made more money for the pensions. But here's the thing. Our pension contributions this year are actually up higher by about $80 million compared with last year's. They would be up about $730 million higher. So instead of saying there's extra money for higher education or social services or healthcare, that's not really the truth. What we're saying is you would have gotten cut a lot worse than you did. They're not really scooping up the savings. The state is actually keeping that money, but the money's not going to other programs. We're just telling other programs, I know you don't like the funding you've gotten, but you would have gotten cut even worse if we hadn't made these surplus payments.
No. But there's a certain segment of the public that does pay close attention to all of this, and that's the business community. What's their take on what's going on with this debate?
Yeah, the business community probably is one of the best educated groups on this, because they feel they have to be. Particularly, we have not really kept our promises to the business community for decades. We've had these surcharges on the corporation tax, and they all come with an expiration date. And usually those are, you know, after 2 or 3 years. And when the time comes to take away those surcharges, legislature after legislature just says, well, we know we said they were going to go away, but they're not. So over time, businesses have become very sensitive to state finances. They know state finances are running in the red, or state government is letting too many expenses dominate the budget. Inevitably, that leads to tax increases and broken promises. So if there is any group that can tell you exactly what these fiscal guardrails are, spending caps that force us to save a portion of volatile revenues, it's generally the business community.
And will this make any difference in how voters vote this November?
That is really the ultimate crystal ball question. I do think, you know, that traditionally the thinking is, as long as you're not raising taxes, voters will usually not change things up. So I'm not necessarily predicting anything. And so much of this election also may be driven at by the top of the ticket. And nobody expects Connecticut to vote for Donald Trump for the presidential race. I think everyone's expecting Connecticut to go for Kamala Harris. But I think overall, that means you're going to see a push from voters to leave these fiscal guardrails right where they are, because they know it's been since 2019 that we've raised state taxes, and we have not raised the state income tax rates since 2015. So I think you're going to see, if there is push from the voters, it's going to be to leave things the way they are.
Well, thank you so much, Keith.
Thank you.
Keith Faniff is the state finances reporter at the Connecticut Mirror. Long Story Short comes from WSHU Public Radio and the Connecticut Mirror. I'm Ebon Udana.
For the latest news from around the Long Island Sound, you can listen on the radio, stream at WSHU.org, or download the WSHU app. After All Things is supported by Hartford Healthcare. And like I mentioned at the top of the show, early voting in Connecticut begins today, and New Yorkers can vote beginning later this week. If you have any questions about the election, we have a voter guide at WSHU.org going over all the races in our region. Plus, we have information on how to register to vote, how to vote absentee, how to find a polling location near you, and so much more. Again, it's all there for you at WSHU.org. You're just going to want to scroll down a little bit on the homepage, and then you're going to see a banner that says Elections 2024. I'm Sabrina Garone. Enjoy the rest of your day. I will speak to you tomorrow. Thank you.